I'm delighted to welcome to the studio the Right Worshipful, the Mayor of St Albans City and District, Councillor Salih Gaygusuz. You are the 472nd Mayor, it says on the sheet in front of me, of the district, and you've been in that role since June of 2015.
May the 25th.
May the 25th.
Last May.
Right, May till May. So this is coming towards the end of your year, and we'll explore with you a little bit more about what you've done during the year and also what your charities that you're supporting and so on, because that's a very important part of the mayoral role.
Yes.
But first, I'm interested because you're probably one of the first, if not the first, foreign-born mayor of St Albans. We're a very English institution. St Albans District probably hasn't had that many foreign-born mayors. Tell us a little about yourself. Where were you born?
I was born very close to Georgia, the northeast of Turkey, on the Black Sea coast. Literally, I'm 1 hour away from Georgia.
And is that today a holiday area?
It is a holiday area with people who likes a bit of culture and history. It is an old Greek city, Trebizond. It has lots of historical locations. It does attract lots of tourists, but not the tourists who are sunseekers.
No. But I think there's also a house called the Atatürk House there.
Atatürk's house is on the hills overlooking the wonderful Black Sea. Quite lucky we actually have that because it's on the hill. Anywhere else apart from where Atatürk's house is, it's all built with block of flats. So the fact that we have the Atatürk's house there is preserved the greenery and the forest. Otherwise, it would have been demolished and turned into a block of flats.
Mm. And this is on the Silk Route, is it?
It is on the Silk Route, historic Silk Route, and you can still walk that path as long as you want, really.
I never quite know where the Silk Route goes. It goes right into China, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, from China to Europe.
Yeah.
Yes, I come from the Silk Route.
Yes. So why did you come to this country?
It's not a long story, really. My father is a baker. He used to run a bakery with his brother. Back in the 60s, they decided to build a house for the family, which was a block of apartments. And they kind of underestimated the cost. So they were struggling with finances because the building site was taking more money than they estimated. And at that time, United Kingdom was seeking foreign workers.
When was this time? This is about 19...
This goes back to 1967. My dad being a baker, he was a skilled man. He registered, he was inspected, interviewed, and he was given a job in United Kingdom under work permit policy. He came here in 1968, and he was working in Kensington High Street, Wimpy Bars.
Right. Okay.
Golden Eggs and Wimpy Bars was the thing in London those days. And for a couple of years, he continued working. And my mother had difficulty dealing with me. When there is no father, if the cat's away, the mouse plays kind of thing. I wasn't very easy person to deal with, even when I was a kid. My father decided to bring me to United Kingdom to keep an eye on me as well as learning English. He knew that learning English as a second language would be a benefit to anybody since it's a global language. In 1972, when it was suggested that my mother wasn't able to deal with me, my father was willing to discipline me, I was willing to take that risk, even though I knew my father was a very hard man to live with because discipline those days was proper discipline. You know, a couple of smacks here and there wasn't a problem, which I had no issues with, because if your father smacks you, that means you've done something wrong. I came here in 1972 to join my dad's. It was very hard first few months living with my father because you just didn't have a social life. You weren't allowed to have social life. His understanding was, we're here for one reason. We're going to get the financial issue out of the way, build our house and go back home, continue our bakery. Mm. We're not here to stay because rest of the family are all back in Turkey. Yeah. And it was 8 brothers and sisters plus mum and dad. It's 10 of us. 2 here, 8 there. Just wasn't a good thing as far as he was concerned.
So did you come and study? You had to learn English from...
I came in 1972. I said to Dad, I got to learn English. I can't do anything otherwise apart from washing up in the kitchen. You know, you don't need to talk to the dishes. Mm. You just wash up, don't you? But I wanted to be a waiter because waiters earn better money and lots of tips. Mm. In Kensington High Street those days, you had lots of American tourists. Mm. They tip well. Mm. They do. It is part of their life. So I went to Holborn School of English, which is, I think, still there. I've travelled there every day, learnt my English. Within a year or two, I was able to get by, be a good waiter and everything else. But by then, I'd already moved to St. Albans, because living with my dad was the most difficult thing one wants, especially a youngster.
Okay.
You couldn't even go to a park for a walk. He just wanted you under his observation.
Yes. Was that family rather than religious culture?
No, it's like family. That. It's just discipline. Family, yeah. It's the upbringing. It's nothing to do with religion. My father said, this is London. This is a foreign land. You don't know who you bump into.
Okay.
I just want to make sure you're safe.
Okay. So why St. Albans?
When I was in Kensington, for the first 2-3 months, I was washing up in the kitchen and my hands were getting a bit wrinkly with water. I made up some lie to my dad. I said, Dad, I found this job where my uncle works in St. Albans, Poppins in Chequers Street, back in the 70s.
Yeah.
I said, my uncle works here. There is apparently a waiter vacancy, but my uncle can keep an eye on me and I could get a job as a waiter and earn more money and we can go home quicker by earning more money, pay the building works and go back home quicker. But that wasn't really my intention. I wasn't willing to go back home. That was a white lie I mentioned to my dad.
Okay.
So he let me, he said, providing you, he had a word with my uncle. My uncle suggested, yes, I'll keep an eye on him, no problem. Send him over, there is a vacancy. So I came into St. Albans, started working in Poppins as a waiter. There was a Wimpy Bar across the road.
Yeah.
And after a while, the same chap who opened a restaurant in French Row called Zorba's.
Yeah.
It's a Greek restaurant. I was working, a Turk, working in a Greek restaurant. A lot of people say, well, Turks and Greeks don't get well. Actually, I worked with Greeks all my life. I never had issues. In fact, I get on better with Greeks than the Turks. We have a similar culture.
Yeah.
So anyway, in 1978, I was working in Zorba's Greek restaurant in French Row, earning good money, helping my dad to settle his building fees. A young lady walked in, local young lady, for a lunch. This is exactly 1978. She came in for a special lunch we had, moussaka and a glass of wine for £1.95. I remember the day very well. So we met, we just clicked. One thing led to another. We've now been married for 37 years, waiting for our grandchild next month. So that's where it began. The fact that I started working in Zorba's, young lady came in for lunch and we ended up getting married and I've been here ever since.
Okay. During that time, we're not going to have time to go through all the stages, but you built up a series of businesses, both locally and in back in London?
Yes. After about a year being engaged to my fiancée, I decided to go into business myself. Working in restaurants since 72 to 78, 79. It gave me enough experience to borrow money from friends. I think I remember the first restaurant I bought was in Tottenham High Road. Although I lived in St. Albans, but I still drove to Tottenham and back. My first restaurant was a Turkish restaurant in 1979 in Tottenham. Still there, in fact, called Shiraz, near White Hart Lane. After that, traveling to London was a bit difficult, and I wasn't able to see my fiancée anyway because of the traveling and hours of work. Harry Smith's Wine Bar in Verulam Road was owned by somebody I knew who was selling it. And I thought, hang on a minute, I quite like that. 1980 it was. Should I buy this bar? And I wanted it, but Ken Aturk ran up English bar in St. Albans. Would people come in and support it? It was a concern. Me and my fiancé were thinking, well, should we not? Will people support us? It's a valid concern. Because I could not imagine an Englishman opening a cafe in my hometown and being successful, I had the same concerns for myself. We decided to go for it. Buy this bar, I think it was £40,000. By the time I sold the restaurant in Tottenham, I was able to raise more funds through the bank that I was banking with, and we bought this bar for £40,000back in 1980. That was the beginning of my really serious business activities in St. Albans.
So I'm going to fast forward a little bit because we've got to get through. So you began to build up a business and you built several businesses in the end, and therefore you became an established member of the local community.
Yes.
St. Albans, 30-odd, coming up to 40 years.
Yep.
You have a wife, you have two children, you live in St. Albans, and then one day you decide you want to become a member of the council. Where's the shift?
I was never a quiet person. as I said, my mum had difficulty with me, my dad had difficulty with me. I was always a very active person in every sense. Running businesses, which I was at one time, I think in total of 4 different premises within like a radius of 300-400 meters of city centre. I was running 4 different establishments. Of course, every decision is taken by the council was a concern to local businesses. These could be pedestrianising a certain street. We remember 1980 when St. Peter Street was to be pedestrianised. We remember when council started charging for bin collection, which was previously part of taxes you paid. So all these changes gives you an excuse to give hard time to the council. Because in the end of the day, council, along with county council, makes these decisions. Since I'm responsible of paying wages for 50 people in this city, I have the right to criticise or praise some of the works they do. So I was always a headache to the council because I often disagreed with some of their policies.
So the best thing to do is to join them?
I wasn't really intending to. I wasn't planning to join them because I didn't think anybody could just get into the council and be elected and raise their concerns. How this happened, we had a wonderful mayor of the city, local councillor for 30-odd years, Gordon Myland. He was a very, I say, a friend. I bumped into him in St. Peter Street, just outside the post office. As I normally do, I was giving him a bit of a hard time, saying, "You guys are a waste of time. You are ruining this city. I'm having to cough up every week 50 people's wages, and all you're doing is ruining the business that I'm doing. Parking issues, rates people pay, all sorts of things." And, you know, while I was moaning at him, he grabbed me from my arm. He said, "All you do is moan. If you want to do something about it, come in and do it from within." I said, "What do you mean? I can't just come in and do anything." He said, "Yes, you can. You're going to stand for election, get elected and work within. See what you can do. If we can't do it, you come and do it." I said, "My name is Mehmet Kaygusuz. Who on earth is going to vote for me? I'm not even English." He said, "Don't worry about that. You just come in. I'll just tell you what to do." So he got me into local Conservative Association, got me signed up, put me my name down for an election in Marshallswick South. By some miracle, a difference of 30 votes, I got elected. So that is how I got into local politics.
Then after you would have been sitting on various committees.
I chaired the Licensing and Regulatory Services for a period of 2 years, which
something
is the limit.
You know something about,
And I always sat on planning committees, which is Plan Central, my location.
All the issues that you've been struggling with.
All the
and
issues.
Then one day somebody says, "There's a vacancy next year or the year after." How does it work for the mayor? How do you get to be the mayor? Do you get...
You obviously have to be a councillor. Once you're a councillor, the mayors are selected from within the council members. Yeah. Based on numbers you have, each political party have different number of members. More you are, the more frequently you can have the mayor year. So it was our turn this year. I showed an interest. First of all, you have to show an interest. You then have to get people to nominate you and second you. And then it goes to a group discussion. Group will take a decision. It then has to go to a full council. Sure. You then have to get the full council support by members raising their hands against or in favour. Okay. So I'm now the 472nd mayor of St. Albans, and it's been a delightful year.
And during that year, you've encountered lots of different groups, voluntary groups, business activities, all sorts of things.
Although I've lived here for 45 years now, things I've discovered in first 2 weeks of being a mayor is a lot more than what I've discovered in 45 years. We are such a wonderfully charitable district that we live in. The associations, the trusts, the volunteer groups, there should be nobody in the district suffering from anything because there is always a body somewhere willing to help and provide whatever is missing out of that person's life. That could be mobility, take you around to do your essential work, home visits, do your shopping, provide you finances, replace your goods, dangerous goods in the kitchen. These are obviously for people in need. But there are hundreds of people out there who are willing to give up their time to make somebody else's life better. And I was just delighted to discover that I'm still discovering that.
But within all of that, you as the mayor, I think the tradition is that you choose one or two charities that you particularly focus on and you try to raise specifically during your year funding to help those two. Which did you choose?
My charities are Renegrow Hospice Care and Keech Cottage Hospice Care. I chose these because when I did the visits of these establishments, I first went to Keech Hospice. And when I saw those kids who have a limited life, and when I saw the people around trying to make that kid's life as best as they can, and in fact, in some cases, some kids have a dream that never happened. Some of them, they do. I mean, without a doubt, they have a limited life. They're there almost probably under the 6 months or a year or two. And they have a dream which never been fulfilled. And sometimes Keech Cottage makes that happen. They say, I've never flown in an aeroplane. They'll make it happen. I want to go to Disneyland. They'll make it happen. I want to go do this and that. They'll make it happen. And it puts tears in your eyes to see these wonderful, beautiful kids who are not as fortunate as you and me, but the people around them, the way they care for them. I mean, I'm not a crying person, but enough to put tears in your eyes. Again, Arena Grow. I know they started doing kids as well now, but they're generally adults. These are the people who gave our lives to us. They're our parents. They're elderly. They're usually suffering with cancer. And Arena Grow helps them to live with that condition. And what a wonderful job they do. I call them angels on earth. So what more one can do rather than just try and create the funds that they need to employ another extra nurse to look after these people that we should care for?
Fantastic. I'm ever so sorry. We could have gone on talking for another half an hour easily. Thank you so much for all that you've given to us.
It's been a pleasure being here, and thank you for the invitation.